Case 19 from the Gateless Gate. Zhaozhou asks Nanchuan, "What is the way?" Nanchuan said, "Ordinary mind is the way." Zhaozhou asked, "Should I try to direct myself toward it?" Nanchuan said, "If you try to direct yourself, you betray your own practice." Zhaozhou asked, "How can I know the way if I don't direct myself?" Nanchuan said, "The way is not subject to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is blankness. If you truly reach the genuine way, you will find it is as vast and boundless as outer space. How can this be discussed at the level of affirmation and negation?" With these words, Zhaozhou had sudden realization. And Wu Man's comment, questioned by Zhaozhou, Nanchuan lost no time in showing the smashed tile and the melted ice where no explanation is possible. Though Zhaozhou had realization, he could confirm it only after another 30 years of practice. And Wu Man's verse, "Spring comes with flowers, autumn with the moon, summer with breeze, winter with snow. When idle concerns don't hang in your mind, that is your best season." So at this session, Josh and David and I decided that we would all give the talk both days. And we're not going to talk at the same time, although that was suggested at the officers' meeting. But we're going to take turns. And we chose this koan to explore during this session. It's a very beautiful koan. It has wonderful elements in it. And one of the reasons that I really love it myself is that it deals with our old friend Zhaozhou, who some of you might remember from the Mu koan. I feel like it's a little bit of a vaudeville routine here with these Zen masters. But of course, Zhaozhou was a great teacher of the Tang Dynasty, and the legend is that he lived to be very, very old, that he had his transmission when he was an older man, and that he wandered for 20 years and then came back and taught for another, some say, 40 years. But in this koan, he's a young man, and some sources say that he was only 18 years old when this dialogue takes place. And I think you all know that it's important when we encounter koans to put ourselves into the koan. And this koan is easy to put in ourselves into because Zhaozhou, a young practitioner, is confused. And I'm pretty sure that every single person in this room encountering Zen, although the heart is pulled, the mind gets confused. And Zhaozhou asks the most basic of questions to his teacher, Nanchuan, also a very famous teacher, and he's featured in many koans as well. Zhaozhou asks, "What is the way?" Now, the word that he is using, and some translations use this, is Dao. What is the Dao? And the Dao is a Chinese word that means the way. It's of course, the basis of Taoism. It means many different things in Chinese Taoism, but essentially it was a way that the Chinese translated a number of different ideas and terms that they received from India. So it could be a translation of the Dharma, specifically the Buddha Dharma, the way of Zen, the way of this practice. His question boils down to, what is going on? What is it all about? What should I do? How do I practice? And all of us, of course, in this room receive instructions on how to practice. And we think we know what we're doing up to a certain point. And then it falls apart. This is part of the way of Zen. There's no way to really give adequate instructions for any of the practices we do, even what we might think is the most basic practice, the practice of being with the breath. That's a practice that can be explored endlessly for decades because the mysteries of it continue to be revealed. Many things continue to be discovered. And of course, Shikantaza, famously, very difficult to understand or explain to another person, and koans as well. We think we know how to practice these things, and what happens in our zazen, in our meditation, in our life as Zen practitioners, is that we discover how to practice, but not in any way that we could explain to any other human being, although we try, and some of us, it's our jobs to try. So how is it that you practice? I hope that the practice that has engendered, has stimulated you to some way of being confused, some way of wondering. As Hongzhi says, he prizes wandering into the center of the circle of wonder. This wondering, this not knowing, is such an important part of the practice. And of course, as we'll explore together over this weekend, Nanchuan is very clear that it's not about not knowing either, because anything we conceptualize isn't it. Well then, what is it? So I hand off to Josh to explain.
The way is not subject to knowing or not knowing. Knowing and not knowing are too small a container to contain the vast, inconceivable source of Zazen, of the way. Whatever we know, whatever story we have, whatever content of consciousness arises for us, is included in the way, but it is not it. This practice includes the entirety of our life, the entirety of our minds, all that arises. We think that the barriers that come up for us in our life or in our minds are between us and practice. If only I could get past this thing right here, then I could be over there and practice. But the arising of this barrier is the form that practice is taking right here. This is not about stilling the mind, quieting the mind, or emptying the mind. It's not about focusing. It's not about feeling calm or relaxed or even equanimous or compassionate. All of those things arise. And all of those things are included, but they aren't any more it than the rest of it. Jiajiao asks, should I direct my mind toward this? Should I direct myself toward ordinary mind? Where can I find ordinary mind? All right, what would that look like? How can I bring that forth into this moment? Man, I can't even. Vividly present from the beginning. And this striving, trying, the volitional impulse itself is actually just another kind of mental formation. And so if we are striving in Shikantaza, the thing that we're striving at isn't it. The practice of seeing the arising of that striving and entrusting ourselves to this way that is vast, this way that is boundless, this way that is wide and forgiving and inclusive. Entrusting ourselves to the vast, inconceivable source that can't be faced or turned away from. From the beginning, nothing is ever hidden. There are no secrets here. Ordinary mind is the Tao. And to clarify this ordinary mind, we are going to listen to David.
So this vast, inconceivable life that we are all living requires so much from us. For me, the beauty of, Melissa said, the beauty of this question, the beauty of Jiaozhou, the beauty of our confusion. What is the way? What is this ordinary mind? Of course, it's not the ordinary mind of thinking. Ordinary mind means I just figure it out. But the mind in which the figuring out arises. Hungjer says, very naturally, mind and dharmas emerge and harmonize. Very naturally, you hear these words without knowing how you hear. Thoughts arise and pass away. We wonder where the path is while we walk on the path itself. So how can we realize this? How can we take this from a lovely teaching? How can we take this from just a nice story that we would like to believe, or maybe we do believe, but how do we realize this ordinary mind? This is the work of our life. This is the work that we consciously turn toward here. This is the path of liberation. All of us are here because deep in our hearts we are longing. We are longing for something. And so we say we are longing for what is already here. We don't have to stop our longing. Indeed, this way-seeking mind, this longing itself is a manifestation. And one by one, each thing we encounter, as Josh said, each mind state, whether it appears as a barrier or a gateway, this gateless gate is manifesting each step, each breath, each thought, nothing special. Ordinary. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. You can turn toward the front if you'd like. And we will engage in our practice of Dharma dialogue. And the encouragement is to come forward as yourself with questions or observations about your experience and practice, about where this touches you.
I was thinking about something that you sometimes say as encouragement at the end of the evening about how it already attained, nothing that needs to be added on to that. And how many times I've taken that encouragement to heart and really wondered what it was to sit as one already attained, not needing to struggle, not needing to do anything. It sounded so nice. And so I would try to do this. That's what you do. report back, like, when asked what it's like to sit as one who is already attained, you know, how was that going? It's like, well, you know, I think I glimpsed a little bit here, but, you know, most of the time not. And this morning it occurred to me that actually, all of that was what it was like to sit as one who was all of that confusion and wondering and missing the mark.
And as we say, that's the good news and the bad news. Yeah. Yeah, Holly.
This morning, sweeping the porch in a snit, feeling slighted and wondering who that is, and over the side of the porch, the seeds were twirling over the side of the porch, and I catch the motion at the corner of my eye, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah, Holly, I love the this quality of noticing what's here, both what we would like to be here and what we would rather not be here, but here I am being myself, and of course we all go to this place, well, I'm only feeling this way because what other people have done. but big enough to include that, and big enough to include the twirling seeds effortlessly falling. Yeah, thank you. Mike?
I really like the that phrase, you know, Nanquan says, you know, to seek, I forget how it goes exactly, but, you know, to seek the way is to betray, you know, the way. It's like betray, I think. It sort of, for me, it conjures up that image of turning away from, you know, so you're betraying, so you're turning away from what's actually going on, what actually is here. But of course, maybe I'm echoing a little bit of what Kate was saying, but as soon as I hear that, I'm like, oh, okay, so if I can just what's going on, that's the key. And then, but of course, sometimes that's painful. And, you know, you say, okay, well, that's what's going on, so how do I fix it? Do I just keep looking at it? And it just keeps being there. And it doesn't provide answers. But, I don't know, but it's just, you just keep seeing it.
Mm. You know, as you speak, Mike, I'm appreciating once again how Xiaozhou just keeps going with his logic, you know, in much the same way we are. Well, if that's true, then I can... Oh, wait, no? Oh, then I should... It's just such a human thing. And I love the way Nanchuan is standing in for the Dharma here. He's representing the Dharma. That's his job. So he keeps meeting... you know, this is what happens when we're doing Zazen. The Dharma, you know, the world, the universe, is always meeting these things. So we think, I'm gonna head for it. Oh, wait, I'm betraying my own practice, so I'll not head for it. You know, and the Dharma's just like waiting for us to settle down. and Nanchuan gives this little mini teisho in there, this little mini talk about not getting caught in this and that, right and wrong, good and bad, knowing and not knowing. He opposes a bunch of things. And I think that's wonderful. And so, in the spirit of this conversation, when we betray our practice, that's it too. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no escape. Mm-hmm. There's just being, just eventually recognizing, eventually seeing, and then forming a concept, getting it all tight and structured, bringing it to our teacher. Oh, gosh. And if we're lucky, we don't get received with, yes, right, that's right, you're right. Because that would be a betrayal. Mm. Yeah. So, beautifully.
Yeah, Nat and then Julie.
So, Moonen's comment, if idle concerns don't trouble the mind, and every season is the best season for you. Mm. So idle concerns troubling my mind. I see their idle concerns. They don't always feel idle. Otherwise, I would just go, oh. I don't feel so idle sometimes. Of course, I can try to direct my mind to talk myself into them being idle. And I can direct my mind towards saying, what other season is there other than the best season? There's no other season. There's only this season, which is happens to be idle concern, which doesn't feel so idle at the moment. So that's just, I'm just babbling more confusion. But that's what I have to contribute. Maybe you could say something about that one phrase of his, which seems to point to, well, if you only just don't do this, then you just, then, you know, then you've got your best season. Implying that if you do that, well, then you got some other season.
So we're ready to respond.
So the line from Mumon, he says, when idle concerns don't hang in your mind, which is a little different. Idle concerns arise and pass away, and then arise again. And just seeing the arising and arising and passing away and arising. All of this is the Dharma glittering beautifully. Mm-hmm. There's also the way is not subject to knowing and not knowing, to good and bad, but also to before and later. And I want to invite all of us to notice when what's arisen in our mind is a story about some previous moment, a story or a wish for some other moment. And even though that story has a content, and the content is the past and future, all of that is arising right here. And seeing that in the right here-ness of it, this is ordinary mind is the way, and this is past and future not hanging in your mind.
The phrase that struck me was the way is not subject to knowing or not knowing. Because I do so often try to achieve some mental state and you know, think I'm making it or not making it. But along that line, I'd like to tell you about a it seems to be a practice-related dream I had last night. As I was going to bed, I was nervous about being Eno the first time, and was I going to do this job, and you know how it was going. And in my dream, I was doing the job of Eno, and it involved, first of all, taking outlines of everyone's feet, pieces of paper, and then handing them back. And then I was taking outlines of people's whole body on pieces of paper and handing them back to each of you. And then, in case the metaphor didn't come through, I was also taking like fenders from your car and banging out the dents. Aww. Which, when I woke up, I thought, oh, that's body work.
Aww. Don't you love the unconscious?
Yeah. It's got a pun all the time. Anyway, so take that as you're chanting. Maybe you're finding the outline of your body. Maybe.
Yeah, one, then Todd, and then Susan.
I've wondered why is it that since my essential true nature, Buddha, is continuously manifesting, do I reject it, meddle with it, avoid it? And it's because I want to avoid suffering, looks like to me. And I basically have my own agenda about how that's to be done.
And how human. Mm-hmm. And the invitation of the Dharma is to look at our attempts to avoid suffering and really ask ourselves, is that working?
Yeah, Todd. I don't know what this is, if it's a question or what, but what arose for me when I was listening to that was, and some of the comments afterwards, was this, the idle concerns in the ordinary mind, and letting the idle concerns arise and go feels sometimes like it makes me a less useful ordinary person. That maybe I see more things as idle concerns, but they're damn important to the person who's expressing them to me. And my letting them go is disappointing.
Disappointing.
To whom I'm with, to the person who I'm with.
How do they know you've let them go? Do you tell them? Because that would be a problem.
No, I think it's not engaging with it in an intensity that I would if it were less than idle to me.
Right. Well, you're.
And I worry about that.
You're pointing to something so important. Thank you. You know, Josh had mentioned in his part of the talk about how all these things arise. You know, compassion, wisdom. They actually do arise with practice. That there is something, and compassion is a really important part of practice, which we can't fake. So it's one thing to have our own personal noticing that the idle concerns are idle. But even, I mean, remember what Nat said, even when we do that, they still hit us. You know, they're awful. They're terrible, idle. But they're actually pretty busy. They're not so idle. So there's this relational quality to the practice. You're relating to the idle concerns internally. And that, but when you look at another person, you don't want to have to expect them to do what you're doing.
Right.
Even somebody in this room, you don't want to expect that of anybody. you know how hard it is for us. So why would we think, you know, we just dismiss stuff? So this is where compassion comes in. Actually looking at another person as not you, who and like really trying, what's up for this person? You know, what's here? And becoming as interested in them as you are in your own mind and body, your own heart. And that's you can't pretend to be compassionate, but you can practice compassion in that way by engaging so fully with another human being. The same curiosity, the same wondering. What is this? And we all know this is you're pointing to a really big danger in Zen practice. We know lots of people, we jokingly call them Zen robots. Don't be a Zen robot. This is about having more of a vivid life, more compassion, more heartfulness. You know, and just to mention too, the word that's translated often as mind here is the word shin from Chinese and Japanese, and it means heart mind. It doesn't actually mean mind. So there's this coming forth of engagement with the world, which we get to do when we stop protecting ourselves. And we do protect ourselves.
Well, and I also think that, Todd, what you're saying, of course it starts with us. And so when these things arise in us, you know, my own caughtness, I can have a tendency to say, well, that's just idle stuff, and I'm a Zen guy, so, you know. But it's so important to honor the arising of the moment. And the kind of, we might think that this means about dismissing or denigrating. And I think what we're all saying here is that this is just the opposite. It's not becoming totally identified, so that's not going to help us either, but to say, oh, there's no problem here, it's just a feeling, just my heart being ripped out. You know? But to really be alive, open-hearted to this. So dismiss is not the word, but to fully engage with full giving up our agenda, you know, as Ray was saying. So I have an agenda that this is a good thing I'm on or this is a bad thing I'm on. And I think the encouragement is, well, this is what's arising, resentment, lostness, anger, and to really honor and bow down to this moment. Yeah.
I want to just add one more thing, and then Josh is going to cap it. That if you're doing this to other people, if you perceive you're doing, you're undoubtedly doing it to yourself, right? And that's the only thing we can work with and to start with. And the other piece too is, we can't just let things go and dismiss them. It goes back to what Ray was saying. We can meet everything, and then see what happens.
And this is such an important area, and one of the idle concerns that hangs in our mind and cuts us off from empathy is, how am I doing? How's my Zen? Is this good? Am I doing the right thing in my mind right now as I'm listening to you? How's it going for me? And so not letting, how's my compassion? Is this good? And not letting that dominate our view. And seeing the arising of that, honoring that, letting that be included, and returning our attention to this being here, this being there, this being here. And this is also something really important about being practicing Zen Buddhism in the world. There's an article in which the author said, my family really hates it when I'm a Buddhist, but they love it when I'm a Buddha. And so be wary of preaching Dharma to anybody, especially anybody suffering. And really, really just be there with them. be there with you, be with the difficulty, and practice in yourself. And this is palpable to the universe. So, yeah. Thank you for identifying that topic.
Susan?
Let me preface this by saying it's not going to come out anywhere coherent. But having an image of railroad train, and I would see myself trying to say, where's it start and where's it going to end? And my job is to hook all the cars that come up onto this train and keep it going. And then I've had this image of what the railroad system looks like, and it goes all over the place, and there are countless trains, and they're all going where they're going at the time they're going. but that serves a purpose. And I don't know what it means.
Sounds like a nice description of the way the mind works, yeah. And our yearning to fit it all together into nice little compartmentalized ideas.
Yeah, I'm glad to know that it's your job to hold it together. That's a real relief for me.
I charge a lot.
But it happens so subtly. I mean, I love that image because, of course, it's what we're all doing. And we pretend, or at least many of us do, we pretend we're not doing it. Right, oh yeah, I know I'm not supposed to. But very subtly, we're trying to arrange the cars and hook up the ideas and hook up this morning's Dharma talk to, you know. So just naming that suggests the possibility of not having to hook up anything or hold it together. And to me, this the trusting that every thought that comes has its own trajectory and is doing whatever it needs to do, and the great faith of all the trains are going exactly where they need to go, and I don't need to meddle with them. Mm. Great relief.
And amid all that, also not putting unnecessary fuel on those fires that burn. And when we stop adding fuel, it doesn't mean they go out immediately or new fires don't start. But we can allow the possibility for them to arise and pass away, missing the trains.
Yeah, Christine.
I'm wondering if Melissa, you could say a little bit about heart mind. What I'm noticing in my practice and at this point in my life is my mind comes in and stomps out my heart when things get too uncertain or a little messy. And so I often find them, and the mind comes in to fix it. Of course, that just doesn't happen. But how to hold that heart mind more? And maybe that's part of trying to figure it out too, I don't know.
And there's probably a little bit of that.
Probably a lot.
Hooking the trains together.
Yeah.
But you know, the reason I brought it up and I didn't really fully open it, when Nanchuan says ordinary mind is the Tao or ordinary mind is the way, he's not talking about your thoughts necessarily, but this bigger heart mind. So thoughts are one of the six senses. You know, there's smelling and tasting and touching and hearing and, what am I missing, feeling and thinking. These things are always arising, always arising. These are the idle thoughts in a way, but they're always arising. But this heart mind is something that that they all live in. And it's not just the discursive mind, the mind that pulls the trains together or says, how am I doing, or any of that. It's this I think it's very important that the Chinese language makes this other kind of... I think they have some other word, I'm not sure. Maybe somebody else knows, for discursive thinking. But this ordinary mind is the... You might say the ordinary heart is the way. I think that's better for us. To think, because the mind immediately we come into planning and remembering and figuring things out and opinions, and but this is something else, something that we discover through this practice. We can't know it if we go towards it, because that would betray our practice. Somebody said that.
If you look at the Chinese character, actually, or I only know the Japanese character, but I assume it's the same. Well, maybe it's not. But
I think it's the same.
But, you know, the character just for Shin is just kokoro, it's just heart. But the character for omoi, which is to think, is like sort of, I feel, it's like having a rice field, or there's some kind of square or box or something on top of the heart. It's like a little something extra there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so... And the heart part is underneath it.
That sounds right.
And I think our practice, so if we're not in the fixing business, then our work is to notice. So Christine, as you talk about noticing what arises in the heart, noticing the mind freaking out, we're investigating our life here. And the teaching is that we don't have to do anything about it. And that's where, and I love how you catch the little meddling, that the mind is taking another guise and wants to really figure this out. And the invitation not to figure it out, to notice, oh, there I go again. Letting that be, letting ourselves be. And that this attention, this compassionate awareness is the solvent by itself.
And I want to emphasize exactly what David said with different words. So you said your mind tries to stomp out your heart. And so the invitation here is, how can you open your, how can you receive this heart mind that is doing the stomping too?
Mike, did you?
Oh, sure. I I was struck by it took him 30 more years of practice after he realizes the way to realize that he had realized the way. That's funny. That's really funny.
Yeah.
And just great. I also, it was really fun for me to just hear about Jiajiao again, like to his early sort of formative place in his practice. So appreciate your choosing the koan. And I also, one of the things that jumped out at me in the reading of it was how many times this word, these words of boundlessness and vastness and, you know, that type of language was evoked. In connection with ordinary mind, which I think is very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great, thanks.
You know, one of the legends about Jiajiao is that he lived to be 120. So if he was 18 when this happened,
mm-hmm.
and he never stopped practicing,
yeah.
that's what we know about him too. So we're talking about, am I right, 102 more years.
Yeah.
30 is just to get his foot in the door. Yeah.
And I also appreciate, even in the context of this koan, you know, it ends with, and Joshua had a great realization. He had a great realization that ordinary mind is the one.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Thank you.
Thank you.